Welcome to the Climate Hour. I'm Bob Grove, your host. Tonight, we're going to discuss sustainable mobility, the environmental impact of how we get there, how we as individuals can make transportation choices that save the planet, save us money, and actually improve our health and longevity. We're joined tonight by Julie Dietrich, Evergy's Manager of Fleet Transit Electrification, Yannick Daunt, who's the organizer of the National Drive Electric Week, Wendy Marine, Evergy's Manager of Clean Charge Network, and Patrick Loftus, who's a Tesla owner and also works with Evergy. So thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Before we start, I want to remind everybody that the climate crisis is a series of cause and effects. Greenhouse gases in our atmosphere absorb heat from the sun and cause the average temperature of the Earth's surface to increase. This global warming causes long-term climate changes to the planet's weather patterns. And this climate change causes weather disasters, hurricanes, floods, droughts, et cetera. These weather disasters are costing us billions of dollars in lives and property damage. And the way we fight them is by stopping their root cause. That's reducing the amount of greenhouse gases in our atmosphere. The EPA reports that transportation accounts for 14% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So our mobility choices play a big role in climate change. I want to start tonight by talking about active transportation, and that's walking and biking. This is really the all-around best solution for getting there. It has zero greenhouse gas emissions. It actually reduces heart disease, diabetes, and depression, so it's great for our health. And economically, pedestrian and bike lanes are cheaper for communities to build and easier to maintain. And active transportation is free. You don't have to buy gas, you don't need licenses or insurance, and there's no tolls or maintenance costs. Walking, biking is really the best solution for the planet, the best option for our health, and the best choice for our pocketbooks and city budgets. The Federal Highway Administration reports that 20% of all trips are less than 1 mile, and 50% of all trips are less than 3 miles. You know, a mile is an easy walk for most of us, and 3 miles is nothing for a bicycle. So choosing to use active transportation will improve your health while lowering your travel expenses and greenhouse gas emissions by up to 50%. That's a lot. There seem to be a lot of new bike lanes and pedestrian paths opening up in the KC metro area. I know we're mostly here to talk about mass transit and electric vehicles, but would anyone like to comment on active transportation before we move on? How about you, Yannick? You get around, do you bike or walk?
I have a bike, and I've been actually looking at, there's so many different electric bicycles options right now that are out there. So I definitely have been thinking about it. I did install a bike rack on an electric car, which it is possible to, you can definitely put a bike rack on an electric car, and a tow hitch that will put that on there. So we definitely try to do a bit more biking, and that's one of the best solutions is to just bike, and you can use a regular bike, or the e-bikes that are out there now are fantastic. So
I'm seeing a lot of new bike trails, at least in the metro area of Kansas City. What about the rest of you? Are you seeing the roads converting to bike trails? Are you seeing more of that?
Yeah, at least here in Overland Park, there's quite a bit of bike access, which is nice.
Quite a bit in Jackson County also.
That's great. It seems like the whole metro area is moving into more bike lanes and pedestrian access, because, you know, that really is our best solution. And, you know, but obviously when that's not available, then that's where we get into our electrification and such. Let's move into mass transit. So, you know, buses, streetcars, trains, et cetera. You know, a 2019 study by the ABA Foundation found that a gas bus produces an average of 37 grams of greenhouse gas per passenger mile, whereas a single passenger gas car produces 356 grams of greenhouse gas emissions. You know, that's almost 10 times more personal car versus a bus. And health studies find that commuting by mass transit reduces stress. Since you're not fighting traffic, you can just enjoy the ride and use the commute time for something else. You know, you think about that, a bus holds around 40 passengers. So that's potentially 40 individual cars that are left in the garage. And streetcars can hold 150 passengers or more. So that's a lot of cars that were taken off a road. Plus, as we move to electric buses and streetcars, that's replacing all of those cars with zero emission transportation. So Julie, tell us about Evergy's fleet transit electrification programs and what's happening locally with electric buses.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of where my job was created. Evergy implemented a transit rate in what we call our Kansas Central region in 2018. And that spurred a lot of business cases for the transit authorities in Kansas to apply for funding and grants, which has resulted in three different agencies being awarded federal money to implement busing projects. We've got Wichita Transit Authority, the city of Lawrence, Kansas, as well as the city of Topeka. I would say the city of Wichita is a little bit further along. They already have a number of buses in service. Unfortunately, with COVID, I think the usability is down right now, but they are ready to go. They're getting really great feedback, not just, for the obvious benefits of going electric, but it's just a much from a comfortable, quieter ride for the people that ride the bus, as well as a nice drive for the drivers. So the user experience for these buses, we received a lot of positive feedback on that as well. So because of that, that kind of spurred my role and also spurred our interest in exploring new rates and rebates in all of our jurisdictions for not just the transit sector, but for commercial fleets as well.
That's interesting. What kind of, how many electric buses are we seeing on the streets in the metro area?
In the city of Wichita, we have, I believe, 13 buses. I might be a little off on that number. The city of Lawrence is going to get 4. And then the city of Topeka is going to receive 3. This is all going to happen between now and in 2023. The city of Wichita is actually committed to replacing all of their diesel buses with fleet over the next 10 years. And then we also have the KCATA here in Kansas City who's receiving their buses this month. So they received 2 electric buses as well.
This first set of buses is kind of a test, a pilot for them. And then do they have plans on expanding that fleet? Do you know where they're going to go?
Yeah, I do believe that they're very interested in exploring options in this space and reducing emissions. They've got lots of things in the works, like the Kansas City, the streetcar is expanding as well. So they're exploring, several different city fleets are also, considering electrifying their fleets as well. So not just for public transportation, but even for the private fleets.
And when you talk about private fleets, that's buses owned by the city for their internal use, or their cars and trucks and those vehicles. I think I read that the KCATA, they moved to natural gas buses not too many years ago. Is and now moving to electric again, is that going to be a challenge financially? Because they do have some fairly new buses on the road. Is it going to take them longer to phase those out because those are so new?
I do know that the typical bus life is around 12 years, so I don't see an early retirement of a diesel or a natural gas bus. And I think the natural gas bus is just another alternative for the cleaner energy. So I think they're just exploring what options they have available. They probably consider available funding when they make those purchasing decisions. And hopefully our rates and rebates will be supportive of that as well.
Absolutely. And I think natural gas was a good solution at the time, but we've moved so far with the electric buses now that obviously we need to take that next step. So I guess what I'm hearing, there's probably going to be a 12-year phase then as they start retiring these relatively new buses, at the end of 12 years or whatever, we can expect to see more of the electrification going out there.
Julie, they still have some diesel buses, right? So I would imagine those would be the first that they would eliminate first, correct?
Well, it's great to see the city's moving in that direction. You mentioned streetcar, and I mean, I don't know what expertise we have on streetcar here, but yeah, I love riding the streetcar. I think that is such a wonderful vehicle, and the free fare and such. I mean, every time I'm on it, it's so packed. They are expanding that. Does anybody know anything about that?
Yes, they had a recent announcement that they were actually expanding, I think, 2 miles. So it's going to just even stretch further across Main Street. So that's going to be an exciting development as well. I think construction has already begun. I have a friend that works at American Century, and she's already noticed the construction starting.
I've noticed those yellow cones myself. I didn't realize that was for streetcar. So that's good to know. So I'm hoping we can see more of that. We had a broadcast a couple of weeks ago on environmental justice, and one of the issues that came up there repeatedly was providing access to these sustainable clean energy transports over on the east side. So I'm hoping, and you know, we can all keep our ears open and encourage that we extend those lines, you know, off the main corridor into the east and west to kind of bring the city together with this free transport.
Yeah, and I've seen the Casey streetcars had national attention for its success.
Yeah.
Which has been pretty nice to see.
Ridership, I think from, you know, like 3-4 months in, I mean, they were looking at millions of people that they were moving, just that small, you know, was that 3-4 mile corridor that they already put in. So it's been a huge success, and I'm hoping that we see a lot more of that. And the streetcar is free, we know that. I was curious, I know that Mayor Lucas at some point had been promoting free bus fares. Does anybody know where that ended up? Where are we at on that?
Yeah, I believe the fares are now free. I would probably have to fact check myself, but I believe the fares are free. The bus fares have already been implemented.
Well, that's great. So our basic conversation of, you know, instead of driving a private car, just jump on the bus, go somewhere. I mean, with free fare, there's really no financial obstacle to that at all.
True.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about buses and trains and such, I mean, mass transit. I wanted to ask about the Missouri Hyperloop Coalition. I don't know if anybody in this group was involved with that, but, you know, there was a push a few years ago by the Missouri Hyperloop to get Virgin Hyperloop 1 to put that maglev train here between Kansas City and St. Louis. And, you know, that would certainly have been a game changer for the Missouri economy. I know Hyperloop 1 ended up picking West Virginia for their initial project, but do we know if there's still momentum to get that kind of accelerated transit in the Missouri area? Has anybody heard anything about that?
No, I don't have any idea.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything lately.
So they've kind of gone quiet. I know that the Missouri Hyperloop Coalition, I mean, they still have a web presence and such. So, you know, if anybody's interested in learning more, you can certainly Google that and go online. But, you know, that's another exciting aspect of mass transit electrification. Well, let's move into electric vehicles. I mean, mass transit is a really important element because it's just so much more efficient, whether it's electric or gas. Using mass transit is great for the planet, and as we said, great for stress levels and health and all of that. It just takes so many cars off the road. But, you know, the personal electric vehicle, if you can't walk or bike, if the bus is not convenient, having an electric vehicle in your garage is really a great way to go. It seems that EV technology has come a long ways in recent years. I was reading a study by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and they reported that modern EVs even wouldn't be in charge using a coal-fired power plant. So they're using fossil fuel electricity to charge the EV. They still produce 50% less greenhouse gas emissions over their lifetime than a standard gas car. And if you have access to a green tariff, if your EV is being charged with wind or solar energy, you're actually producing 99% less greenhouse gas emissions over your lifetime. It's also important, I think, to mention that the maintenance cost on an EV is much less than a gas car. You know, think about that. There's a lot less parts. You know, there's no muffler or starter, no oil pumps, spark plugs, gaskets, filters, all that stuff that traditionally requires a lot of maintenance in an internal combustion engine. There's just fewer moving parts and all that maintenance goes away. So you spend a lot less driving the EV, not just on fuel, but on maintenance. Right. A 2018 study by the University of Michigan found the average American gas car costs $1,117 per year to operate, and the average EV costs just $485. That's a couple years old, I guess 3 years old now, so it's probably even a wider spread. That same study found that the average American gas car goes 22 miles on a dollar, whereas the average EV goes 36 miles per dollar. So EVs are not only good for the environment, but they're good for your pocketbook. I think the prices of EVs, haven't they dropped a lot? They're now similar to the price of a comparable gas car, and the charging stations are much more common, and driving ranges have increased. It really sounds like electric vehicles are now very competitive with their gas models, their gas models, and they're cheaper to maintain, and they're just great for the planet.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about electric vehicles when I mean, on the forums and everywhere. Even when Evergy posts something on Facebook, I have to respond to a lot of people because there's a lot of misconceptions. They always, one of the biggest misconceptions is about the materials, and they talk about cobalt, and actually cobalt is not one of the big factors. One of the big use people who, I mean, it's electronics that use most more of the cobalt than the electric vehicles do. There are batteries now that are produced that have technology that don't even use cobalt anymore. So there's a lot of misconceptions there. And there's, I think, an article, I think it was the New York Times that came out with an article that actually showed electric vehicles were better for everything. I mean, environment in costs wise and everything like that. So that's also, people always think, well, it's cost more money. Well, no, if you keep the car in the long run, it's going to save you more money. And again, it's the same thing. We talk about electric. Well, even a snowblower, I had someone in Iowa that was complaining about his snowblower because it was, and I said, go electric. You won't have to deal with, mixing the oil. You don't have all the fumes in your garage. It doesn't smell up your garage. There's so many more advantages of just going electric than anything else.
I agree. That study by the Union Concerned Scientists, they looked at the entire lifetime of the vehicle. So we're talking about manufacturing the vehicle and then obviously driving it through its lifetime and then disposing of it at the end. And with the electrics, they were pointing out that the batteries of the electric get recycled.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not like those rare earth minerals and stuff go back into the environment. Those batteries can be reconditioned and then put back out there in a new car. So when we talk about them being 50% less greenhouse gas emissions, that's, manufacturing and disposing the car as well as driving it. So I think that's
the batteries, the elements inside are too valuable to throw away. Yeah. So nobody's doing that, but they are recycled because they are.
And they repurpose them to do like battery backup. They often know those batteries are repurposed for battery backup. So
So they're moved into home for home solar, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's good to know. I was talking to Julie earlier, or maybe it was Wendy, I don't remember, but that they've got a new battery being manufactured in China. It was manufactured by an Israeli company called StoreDot. And this battery actually takes a full charge in 5 minutes. So you think about that those are being manufactured right now in China and put in cars. If you think we had that here, you could basically drive into a charging station, a gas station, a charging station, and charge your EV in the same amount of time it would take to fill your gas tank. Wouldn't that be a game changer?
Yeah, that definitely would. And not to mention that I think people forget too that most of your charging happens at home or the office. So, you're looking at the charging for road trips. That's a little bit longer currently. But I get home, I plug my car in. Every morning I have a full tank. And you can do the same if your office and it has chargers there. So that's just 5 seconds versus your 5 or 10 minutes to fill up your gas tank.
So even people who live in apartments. I mean, I was delivering packages the other day to an apartment complex, and there was a Nissan Leaf out there. And so, I mean, when you have enough range, you don't necessarily have to charge every day if you're just doing a short trip. So that's also, people don't think about that. But people who live in an apartment complex can still have an electric car as long as you have that range. You just, charge it once in a while at a public charger. Some public chargers are still free anyway. So you can go get your groceries and you're all charged up. So yeah, there's a lot of options out there.
Yep.
Seemed like the last time I checked, which was probably 2019, so a couple of years ago now, the Tesla Model 3 had a fuel economy equivalent of 141 miles per gallon, was around 50,000 MSRP and could go 322 miles on a single charge. The Hyundai Kona, I believe, had a fuel equivalent of 120 miles per gallon, cost around 37K and a range of 292 miles. And the Chevy Bolt had the equivalent of 188 miles per gallon, cost 36K MSRP, and could go 383 miles on a charge. So that's been a couple of years ago. And you know, this technology just continues to evolve. I'm wondering where we're at now. I mean, what kind of range? I know, Yannick, you're driving a Bolt now, and Patrick has the Tesla. And, you know, Wendy, I think you said you were driving a Bolt occasionally. Mm-hmm. What kind of mileage are you seeing on those? I mean, what kind of range and such? Can you tell us about some specifics? Why don't we start with Patrick?
Yeah, so I have a 2018 Model 3. And my version, my version is the performance version, so it takes a little bit less range than some of the other lines. But I'm well over 300, and I think the new ones are 350. So every year they're just increasing a little bit. And of course, that's just like your gas car. That's the ideal range and perfect conditions. So if the weather's really bad, or you're driving really fast on the highway, that will tick down. But yeah, that's where we were 2 years ago. And then some of the higher end cars right now are looking at 500 to 600 miles of range. And that's going to slowly trickle down into the less expensive vehicles.
I think I was looking at the Tesla Roadster, and they're saying that has a 620 mile range.
Yeah, which is
And battery technology is becoming more efficient. The software, I mean, even the Tesla Model 3 has, over the years with the software, they've improved efficiency. So it goes, I mean, the range has been increased even there. So the bolts you're looking at over, I think once you reach over 200 miles, that's the kind of the sweet spot for me. I think most people don't necessarily drive that much. You know, a lot of the questions sometimes is, well, what if we have to do a road trip? Okay, well, if you have to do a road trip, you just have to think a little differently in how you're gonna plan that road trip. And if some, for some people, they don't necessarily wanna wait to charge, I mean, you could always eventually rent a car at that point. I mean, you don't really necessarily do a road trip every single week or month. So it's definitely doable. So,
right.
I think there's no question in terms
we're
of-
We're two cars.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I was gonna say, I think there's no question in terms of commuting urban transport. I mean, the electric's way to go. It just, you know, there's no downsides whatsoever. The longer distance, you know, the trips, you know, we as Americans love to get on the highway and go.
Right.
That's where we're facing the challenges, but it does seem like we're overcoming those challenges, you know, ranges in the 300 to 600 miles. I mean, most people aren't going to drive more than that in a day anyway. So, you know, stopping at a hotel, stopping at a charging station someplace makes sense. And the new battery technology that, you know, I say in China now, they can fill up their battery in 5 minutes. You know, we get that here in America. And, you know, I think we were talking earlier about the new bus technology that can go over 1100 miles on a single battery charge. So we're really overcoming that range restriction.
I was going to add too, I think you're going to find a lot of the states are giving more attention now to getting charging infrastructure in place along the highway corridors, recognizing that people want to do long distance traveling. And each state, Kansas and Missouri, they both have a bucket of money through the VW settlement that they have earmarked for highway infrastructure build out. So we will see that in the coming year or two. Missouri is ahead of Kansas. I think by the end of 2021, you should see some significant additions of fast chargers along the I-70 and other primary corridors in Missouri. Kansas, maybe another year or two, but we are making great strides in getting that infrastructure in place.
So Wendy, I mean, you manage Evergy's charging stations, right?
Yes.
How big is your network? I mean, just kind of some big numbers. Area you're covering, how many charging stations does Evergy have out there?
So we're at about 1,100 charging stations now, and we cover our entire service territory in both Missouri and Kansas. With the merger in 2018 with Westar Energy, we now expand across the state of Kansas, you know, past Topeka and down south to Wichita. That's why Julie's so familiar with all those mass transit organizations. And we're going to continue to expand that network, primarily focused on the Kansas Central market. We've done a pretty good build out here in the Missouri metro area. I'm going to put a little bit more attention into that Kansas Central, Topeka, Wichita area, as well as some focus on highway corridors, secondary, tertiary corridors where other third-party vendors may not find them as profitable for their business cases. We want to make sure we fill in those gaps so we can get our customers in our service territory able to adopt those electric vehicles and get where they want to go.
How many, obviously the highways, corridors, do you also have charging stations just kind of randomly placed around town? How do you select where those go?
I think initially in the first 5 years of the program rollout, we were very targeted in ensuring that we were very diverse in our rollout. We wanted to make sure we had some in retail locations, schools, hospitality, hospitals, rural, urban, metros. So we sprinkled them across the board in our initial rollout. The next 5 years, the focus in Kansas Central, we're going to take some of our lessons learned, be a little bit more strategic in the deployment of those charging stations, focusing on longer dwell locations such as workplaces for those multifamily customers that don't have access to charging in their own personal garages, as well as getting people to enable to travel longer distances along the highway corridors. Julie alluded to some rebates. We are in the process of proposing to both the Missouri and Kansas commissions some rebates for both residential and commercial customers to also install charging infrastructure. So we're not going to do it all by ourselves in this next go around, but we want to ensure that everybody has access to charging where they need to have access.
Patrick, you mentioned you're charging at home. Do you have a dedicated charger, or are you using I hear a lot of EV users are actually just plugging into their dryer outlets, their 220s.
Yeah, so I did that for a bit. I actually had it's an RV outlet installed in my garage. It was pretty cheap. And I just have a cord that comes with the car that just plugs right in and then it handles it. So like I said, every morning, full tank, the car's warm, it's great.
Yeah. Does the, kind of that 220 dryer outlet, which is, we all kind of have those in the home already. Are there faster chargers you can put in your home?
Yeah, so it varies. So your basic dryer outlet is about 30 amps. The RV outlet's 50. So you start to see a little more speed increases. If you install a dedicated, at least in the Tesla example, a dedicated charger will be another level up from that speed-wise. But even the slowest one, you're looking at a full charge overnight, eight sure. to 12 hours, it's going to be full regardless. So there's not a whole lot of benefit, depending on what your use is.
A level two is about 25 miles per hour of charging on a level two charger. So
I was going to say, you can cut your time of charging in half, or more than half, by upgrading to that dryer outlet, RV outlet, as Patrick said. And we also have studies that show it's actually more efficient for you to charge with a level two outlet versus just plugging into your standard outlet in your garage. Right. So.
What does, just some ballpark prices, what would a level two outlet in your home run?
It's going to depend on your where your box is. Mine was like $400 because my electrical boxes in my garage.
So really, a few hundred
matters.
We're not talking thousands. We're talking a few $100 to make that accessible.
It depends. So there's a lot of variables. Yeah.
So I would think that would pay for itself after a few months, just in terms of faster charging. Wendy, I'm curious, the public charging networks versus home charging, pros and cons of home versus home network, or a home plug-in charging versus a public charging network, and is there a cost differential on that? Is one cheaper or more efficient than the other?
Sure. Advantages of home charging is you can come home in the evening and plug in, or you could set a time for when you want that charge to take place. Of course, as a utility, we always love for you to push that charging to after 8 p.m. when it's off peak for us. It is, in most cases, probably less expensive for you to charge at home if you have the capability and access to do that. Public charging, great to have that on your travel and commutes to know that should you need to stop to get that charge, you could access charging for your vehicle. So there's different uses for both. Mm-hmm.
So Yannick, you said you're driving a Bolt. Tell us a little bit about that. How's that experience going for you? And you've also driven Tesla, so maybe you could give us a comparison.
Yes, I used to have a Leaf. So I've been driving EVs for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. I've driven every model of the Teslas except for the Y. And the Y now is coming out with third row seating, which is really amazing. And so, yeah, we charge at home, level two charger. We have solar panels. So in the summertime, I mean, I think all our electricity is 100% solar, even with an electric car in the mix, which is amazing. And so we went from a Nissan Leaf. The Leaf was just basically had lower range. We needed a bit more range. And so we went for the Chevy Bolt. And eventually I still have a gas car, but that one is going to be replaced with another electric vehicle. And hopefully this year we'll see if we get, you know, more incentives from the government too, because, you know, there's a tax credit that's available too for electric cars. And you have to, the cars that have reached a certain amount of sales are not eligible anymore. So Tesla is not eligible, GM is not available. But GM, for example, on the Bolt is doing incentives where they have a reduction, which is basically equivalent of the tax credit. Volkswagen is coming along, Volkswagen will have the tax credit. The Mustang Mach-E is coming out, will have the tax credit. So all those cars that are coming out this year will have those tax credits. So really attractive prices on all those vehicles, and more choices this year too, which is nice.
It's a good financial incentive.
I just took possession of the Mini Cooper. So I'll probably would love your advice on how to get that tax credit. So that would be something I'll need to tackle here in the future. The Mini Cooper is super fun to drive. The range is only around 100 miles. But it is a second car. I'm not taking it cross country. It does great for what I need to do, you know, in my day-to-day life. And then I have that second car because I'm married and we have a second car that I can use for those other uses that the Mini, you know, would prohibit me to do. It's been a really good experience so far.
What about performance? So, I mean, we got Mini Coopers, Bolts, Teslas. I mean, we got a range of cars here. How does that performance of your car compare to, you know, either other cars, other EVs you've driven, or more importantly, how does that compare to a traditional gas vehicle?
Well, the EVs, you always have instant torque. So, and you've got instant torque, even not just from zero to whatever, 60, or even when you're driving on the highway and you have to do an emergency maneuver, you've got the instant torque, so it's a lot safer car there too, because you have that power when you need it right away. So that's a huge advantage of the electric cars. And like Patrick was saying, where you can have remotely with the app, you can preheat the car and you can have that, your car can be in your garage. You don't have to do a remote, you know, starting where the car can't be in the garage where it's going to pollute your whole garage. That's another beautiful thing with those cars. You can just preheat them or pre-cool them in the summer. If you've got groceries in your car, you can just push on the app and it will pre-cool them. Teslas even have a method where it will prevent the car from overheating. So if you have pets or in the car, you can leave the car and it will automatically not overheat. So there's a lot of advantages there with electric cars.
Yeah, and I've always been a performance car guy. So I think you'll find, you know, some of the performance Teslas, the Porsche Taycan, those cars are as fast or faster than most gas cars you'll find out there. So there's no compromise as far as speed. In many cases, it's superior. Not that I ever, you know, push that myself, but.
Oh, sure. We believe that.
Yeah, a friend of mine, we did an autocross with a Tesla Performance 3 and we won. I mean, we beat everybody that was coming over there with huge souped up gas cars and everything. And it just, I mean, and it was really funny because you could hear it on, all you could hear was this tire screeching instead of all the noise that usually gas cars make. But I mean, that car just outperformed everything else. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, for sure.
So talk a little bit about maintenance on your EVs. You know, we've got three EV owners here. How's that maintenance? I mean, I was quoting some facts earlier that I read about, you know, how much cheaper it is and easier. You guys are actually in the car, so you know what's the real world on that.
So there's not really any maintenance. You're looking at really just your tires and like your air filter for your cabin air for the most part. I've had mine for 2.5 years. It's just been tires. The brakes last for a very long time with EVs because they use the regeneration to slow the car down. So there's a lot of cars with 100+ thousand miles on original brakes. You know, there's no spark plugs or belts or hoses or any of that junk to deal with, oil changes. So that's been great. You know, I used to work on my own cars. I don't have time anymore. So it's a nice change, to be honest.
Yeah, same thing, the Leaf, Nissan Leaf. We had it for several years. I replaced the air filter myself. Replaced the tires once, and that's about it. It's really fantastic. I mean, you have no maintenance. And like I said, it's also, it's much quieter, but it's also, you don't have those fumes in your garage where you'll have anything that's gas related. You'll have that smell, or you'll have that, and all those parts of the oil, or you have an oil leak, or not, you don't have that anymore at all in an electric car.
Julie, you said you just recently got the Mini Cooper. Did you like it? Does that come with a maintenance contract? I mean, what does that look like for a first-time buyer?
I have a 4-year 40,000 mile bumper to bumper, and then 8-year on the battery. So I thought that was very competitive and reasonable. And I've had other Mini Coopers in the past, and it's a good company to work with, you know, when you need service and if you have questions.
So is this the first EV Mini Cooper?
This is my first EV, period, yes.
So 8-year warranty on the battery. What is the average lifetime on a battery? Have any of you had to replace the batteries in your car?
Yeah, no, I haven't. You know, I think it varies by manufacturer, and they can progress every year. I mean, there's some EV batteries out there on a couple 100,000 miles that I've seen. So I think it's progressing and pretty good already. I don't know if you guys have any.
Yeah, I mean, and some of the degrade. I mean, there's certain degradation on batteries, just like on your cell phone. But of course, it doesn't degrade as fast as your cell phone. But different manufacturers have different ways of how they do that. Having a battery liquid cooled battery also helps degradation. And there's been discussions too, like a car having like a heat pump in the winter time, where that will change drastically. Like the Model 3 has been updated now with a heat pump. So that makes it a lot more efficient also. Volkswagen's ID.4 will not come up with a heat pump in the United States, but it will in Canada, which is kind of interesting. They say that it's not really necessary. We'll see, you know, once it comes out, we'll see how all that works. But I still believe that a heat pump is definitely a plus in an electric vehicle.
Let me change the subject a little bit here. I mean, we kind of hit on streetcar and buses, you know, the mass transit, which, you know, obviously remains very important in balancing EVs and such. What about the larger aspect of electrification? I'm thinking in terms of freight and passenger trains, things like that, you know, heavy rail. I've been reading about a group called Solutionary Rail that's proposing that we take a public-private partnership, but that an organization takes those Amtrak Northwest corridors and upgrades those to high-speed electric. So, you know, freight and passengers, you know, bullet trains, whatever. You know, we see it in Asia, Europe, we see a lot of trains doing, you know, 300+ miles per hour. And we kind of touched on that maglev, that Virgin Hyperloop One thing that we were hoping to get here in Missouri for a while. But the idea of taking that nationwide. But this project is looking at the existing corridors and saying, you know, let's upgrade those, let's electrify those, let's, you know, do high-end trains like Europe and Asia is doing. But the other aspect of that really impressed me is that they want to use the electrified rails to transport renewable energy from the Northwest into the high population areas of the Midwest and further East. I mean, to me, that's kind of like a magic bullet to think that we can have high-speed rail and also the electric grid upgrade we need to move renewable energy around. So, you know, very much a win-win. Has anybody heard anything about that or has ideas or opinions about where that could lead in the future?
Yeah, I haven't been up on that. You know, I think we'll see a variety of solutions. There's several companies that are working on electric semis. And so I think you're going to see that. You're going to see electric trains. You know, the market is so big, no one solution, no one company is going to be able to service it. So it'll probably be a hodgepodge, you know, for a while until we get there.
Yeah, and I've seen hydrogen solutions too that are coming out. I think it was in Asia too, where in Japan they had a hydrogen bullet train, or, and we're seeing like hydrogen being used also in bigger items. Like, well, I don't think we'll ever see hydrogen in electric vehicles. There's just, it's too complex for electric vehicles, but for like oil tankers, and it's just ironic that it's an oil tanker, but tankers or big boats would be hydrogen, or even planes. I think Boeing was working on hydrogen planes also that we would see by 2030 or something like that. So that's another solution there. Hydrogen is an option for bigger items, basically.
What other modern tech are we seeing coming? We've mentioned, passenger buses that can go over 1,100 miles on a charge. We've talked about new EV batteries that can actually take a full charge in 5 minutes, hydrogen planes. I mean, what else are you guys hearing? Wendy, you're nodding your head. Are you?
The only thing I'm more familiar with is probably more storage solutions will be coming out. I think you're going to see utilities using more storage solutions, more residential storage solutions. That is what I think we're going to see here in the future, in addition to all the electric charging in the homes, more solar. I think they all tie in together.
Yeah.
And Julie, you know, electrification of fleets. What do you feel like the future of that is?
I do hear, you know, we kind of keep a pulse on what happens, you know, in the ZEV states and California. And I think they're exploring the option of the vehicle to grid a little bit more. So we're just kind of keeping a watch on that. I mean, if you think about a fleet of school buses that sits all summer, that's a field of batteries or storage. So like, what are the options and applications that you can use with that?
And even for residential people, I mean, so if I have a car, I get home at 6, let the grid pull my battery down a little bit for that peak period, and then you can fill it back up at a lower rate, help the grid, maybe save some money. That's great, win-win.
Just talk about that a little bit more. You use the phrase fleet to grid, which I'm personally not familiar with that. So you're actually talking about using your EVs, you know, whether it's a fleet EV or a, you know, personal EV as a storage device for perhaps your solar home or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right.
Yep. Yep. Two ways in using the batteries of the vehicle for other applications and managed usage.
So when you're not out driving the car in your garage, actually acts as storage for your home solar.
Yeah, for your home, for the grid, the entire grid. So you could be putting electricity back to the grid, you know, as demand goes up and down.
Are Evergy people, so does Evergy have net metering? So, I mean, if we're pushing electricity back in the grid, do we get paid for that?
For solar today, yes.
For solar today?
Mm-hmm.
That's
Independence Power and Light does the same thing. They solar goes back, we get money back from that. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Independence Power and Light does not have net metering yet. I would love, love, love to see that, where you could charge at a lower rate. But
Do we, and how does like rooftop solar, community solar pull into this? I think, Wendy, you were saying that there's a connection between it all interacts and works together.
Well, sure. I mean, community solar, you know, that's a great option for people who don't have a residential home or don't have the right roof or have too much tree coverage, and they just solar for their home is just not applicable. So if they want to be green and have cleaner energy, community solar is a great option for them.
So we've got about 10 minutes left. I'd like to give everybody an opportunity, you know, closing statements, if you will, but, you know, give everybody a chance to talk about what's happening now and you know, what they're excited about, where we're going. Yannick, you want to start?
For people who are, you know, thinking about an EV, I think it's definitely something worth looking into. I mean, there's, like I said, there's so many advantages, less maintenance. It's also, you know, a lot of people think about maintenance and money, but it's also a much quieter ride. If you think about it, they've been done studies too, where it's less stress, because when you're doing a road trip and you don't have all that sound that a regular gas car makes. But yeah, if anybody has any questions, We do have events that go around throughout the year that you can attend. National Drive Electric Weeks in September. There's an Earth Day event usually around March or April. The Tesla Group also has events that happen. And then, yeah, if you've got any questions, I mean, people can always email me. And there's also two really good Facebook groups that are available. But we're the EV grouper community is really, really good at, you know, answering questions that people have about getting into an EV. So definitely invite people to reach out.
You mentioned EV groups. Are there a lot of owner groups or support groups for EVs here in the metro area?
There's a Kansas City Facebook EV group for all EVs that's available. And then there's another one that's specifically, I know for Tesla, there's one that's, you don't have to be a Tesla owner. You can just also still join that one. And then of course, there's other groups that are more generalized for specific cars. I know it was, you know, specifically for all models, but I don't know if there's any for specifically Kansas City, but like there's a Bolt group, there's a Tesla group, those groups are all on Facebook, but the local EV scene, yeah, we definitely have one available.
You mentioned National Drive Electric Week. When you hold those events, you know, how many EVs do you have? What kind of EVs come to those?
We usually get a whole bunch of different EVs from all different manufacturers. I try to reach out to manufacturers to display certain cars so people can reach them out. The advantage of those events is you're actually talking to actual customers about their cars. You're not dealing with a dealership. Some people don't like going to a dealership and dealing with salespeople. Those events are nice because you can reach out and ask the questions you want to actual owners. Some owners are actually very nice. They'll let you actually drive the car. So you have that too. And yeah, we just get a whole bunch of people that come to those events, and we've had people before that come and then we see them in the next few weeks or months buy an electric car. So it's nice.
It's very nice. Wendy.
Yes. So Julie and I are here talking about transportation electrification, but we're part of a team that's just focused on electrification as a whole. We have a vision to unlock the value of electrification through, you know, innovative initiatives. We believe that there's quite a bit of benefit. We've talked about air quality benefits as well as increased usage of electrification in a beneficial way, we talked about off-peak hours when we have excess capacity is a benefit to all of our customers because it enables us to drive rates down for everybody. So we're just going to continue to focus on new innovative initiatives for transportation electrification on road, as well as others on our team are looking at building electrification and off-road applications, just trying to bring programs and products to our customers that they want and need.
Julie?
Yeah, just really, Wendy said it well. We have an entire team of people. So if people have questions that are utility focused, and if there's unknowns there, you can definitely reach out to me or Wendy, and we would be happy to get you connected with the right person. And not just for electrification, if you're interested in other sustainable offerings that Evergy offers as well.
Patrick.
Yeah, I just I'd say that you know, EVs have come a long way. So if you have some preconceptions, maybe you'll look into it further, talk to some owners. They're definitely no longer a compromise. And I think generally with new technology, people tend to forget the hassles of what they're doing currently and just focus on the cons of the new technology. But I think if you really measure things equally, you'll be very surprised.
That's cool. So let me summarize our talk this evening. I mean, we talked about active transportation, which is walking, biking. You know, passive transportation is where you're letting something else move you, which is great. But, you know, active transportation and the growth of bike trails and paths throughout the whole metro area. So, I mean, that's a growing thing. And, you know, the Federal Highway Administration pointing out that, 20% of all of our trips are under a mile, 50% of all of our trips are under 3 miles. I mean, if you can walk and bike those, it's great for your health, it's great for the environment, it's great for your pocketbook. Probably the next step up there in terms of saving the planet is our mass transit. You know, there we're talking our buses and our streetcars. And, you know, we've come a long ways in the metro area. I mean, we're seeing the electric buses. I mean, Julie, you're talking about fleets in Wichita and Topeka and how we're starting to phase the electrics into the metro area here. an electric vehicle and basically zero greenhouse gas emissions, 99% reduction, whatever, plus getting all of those potentially gas cars off the road, a bus replacing 40 individual gas cars, a streetcar replacing 150 individual cars. If we can't walk or bike and we have the choice to hop on a nice bus to get where we're going, or if we've got access to the streetcar or the expanded streetcar line that's going to be down to, to UMKC in a year or two, hopping on that to go downtown, it's great for the environment, improves your health because you're not stressing out in rush hour. You just get to sit there and, read or enjoy the commute. Those are also really good things. And then when we do need to commute personally and it's too far to walk or training, whatever, the EV cars. And, this group has a lot of great experience with EVs. And I think we've learned a lot. The fact that the ranges have improved. I mean, if you're going anywhere in the city, an EV is going to get you there with no problem at all. And even if you're taking a road trip, with the charging networks and stuff, those are becoming much, much more feasible. It's great to hear that the maintenance on the EV is practically nothing. I was really surprised to hear, how little that's costing. Having drive internal combustion engines for most of my life, you spend a lot of time tuning those things and keeping them in shape. And what I'm hearing is you just don't do that with the EV. You change the tires, maybe change the air filter, and the thing just keeps on cranking. And batteries lasting 8 years longer, 200,000 miles on a battery. And then the fact that battery, those precious metals, that doesn't end up in a landfill, that totally gets recycled into something else. And I also kind of hearing that, the EVs are price equivalent with the gas cars. It's not going to cost you a whole lot more to buy an EV. So, really seeing no downsides to any of that. So that's all just really great news. And I think I'll go out and buy an EV.
Great.
So, if people wanted to reach out to you or, talk more to you, if you want to share an email or a website, whatever, just places for people to go and get more information. Patrick, how would people do that?
Probably easiest for me is the reach out to me on the Kansas City Tesla Enthusiast website.
And what is that URL? Do you know?
I'd have to double check. But if you Google that, it'll come right up on the first option.
Perfect. Yannick?
I think easiest way is just to reach me by email. It's just my first name, Yannick, at mac.com. Just people can reach out by email. I'm always there to answer any questions people have. So
that's great. Wendy, what's the best place to reach Evergy for this kind of electrification?
Sure. If they wanted to reach out to me directly, it's my first and last name, wendy.marine at evergy.com. Or you can go to our website, the Clean Charge Network. There's a link that you can post questions that will come to me as well, or just use it as an opportunity to learn more about electric vehicles and our charging network in our service territory.
And Julie, what about fleet electrification? Where can we learn more about that?
You can email me directly, same as Wendy, julie.dietrich at evergy.com. On Evergy's main website, if you search for the word fleet, you should get an interest form. And if you fill out a form, if you're interested in fleet, and transit electrification, you can reach me that way as well.
And you can find a lot of this information on the Climate Council's website. And that's www.climategkc.org. So I want to thank our guest. I've learned a lot tonight, and I think it's wonderful what's happening in this sector. And I want to thank our listeners. So please join us next month when the Climate Hour is going to look at sustainable fashion. The EPA points out that the industrial sector is the fourth largest emitter of greenhouse gases, and fashion accounts for over 50% of all industrial greenhouse gases globally. That's kind of a shock to me, but we're going to learn about how our fashion choices have a huge impact on industrial greenhouse gas emissions. So that's next month. Please join us then. I'm your host, Bob Grove.